saying that Tracy Jr. didn't get his degree at Berkeley. Oh, a number of reasons. Just the hippie culture that exists even with the professors who are holding a required course in a beer hall on family evening night instead of in a regular classroom situation at the school. Tracy refused to go to that course. The only course he lacked to get his degree as far as coursework was concerned. Then they have those professors down there that figure they keep this slave labor on for 5 years. Tracy had done plenty of work for a thesis, but this Professor Phillips, who was his major prof, wanted to keep him there about 5 years before he let him out. Tracy should have stayed at BYU. He'd have got his PhD. He'd have had a better thesis even, I think, than he would have ended up with at Berkeley. Tracy and Betsy thought they should go to Berkeley. And maybe they should, I don't know, but I wish they hadn't. I don't know how you characterize the kids. They're all different, all have their virtues. Let's go on another one.
Well, I was just thinking you'd go down and describe their personalities.
Well, personality's pretty hard to describe. Charlene's personality is in some ways like her mother's, in that she's a good talker and interesting and likes people and immediately becomes acquainted with people. Your personalities of you and Mom are both outgoing personalities. Tracy Jr.'s like me. Tracy Jr. has an introverted personality, an inward personality. He's a thinker. He's a dreamer, but a dreamer, you know, by a dreamer, thinkers and scientists and creative people are dreamers. They dream, they daydream a lot. That's the way you come up with things. You're very good at writing. Tracy Jr.'s good at writing. Tracy could have been a poet. He could have been an English major. In fact, Bob Thomas wanted him to be. All of you have musical talents. Personality-wise, Tracy's personality is he's a little... don't know how to say it. Maybe unpredictable on what you might expect him to say.
He's got a subtle sense.
Huh?
He's got a subtle sense.
Yeah, he has a very subtle sense of humor. Tracy Jr. has a very dry, subtle sense of humor. My brothers are that way. Eugene and Wendell are that way. David. David is very businesslike.
He gets things done. He works fast.
David works fast. And he gets things done. David is ambitious, but he's industrious. I don't think he is he's not at all obnoxiously ambitious as much as I've seen of him lately. All of you seem to have a religious nature. See, we go on to Elizabeth. Elizabeth.
She's our most musical.
She's probably the most musical. I don't know how to measure musical ability, true musical ability. I think you had some ability that even Liz wouldn't have. You have, you could hear the piece and play it on your cello. Yeah, Liz could do that, but I think your ear might have even been better than Liz's.
Oh, yeah, she has done.
But Liz has perfect pitch.
All of them musical. Liz never had to be told. Right?
Well, Liz has something artistic, a gift.
Yeah.
She has a
musical expression.
A natural, sure, she's worked at it hard, but she has a real gift. It's just a
feeling.
Something heaven sent.
Charlotte is our quietest child. She inherits that from her father because my natural tendency is to be quiet.
I thought you were going to say that she may inherit that from my mother.
Well, you know better than that. Huh? Charlotte, well, all right. I thought something was the matter. I was down to Charlotte already, but I'll continue with Charlotte. Charlotte is a peacemaker type, probably more of a peacemaker than any member of the family.
She's the strong, silent type.
She's the kindest.
Yeah, she's strong, silent, kind type.
She never yells.
I'd rate her spirituality high. I don't know that I've seen Charlotte blow up. She may have done sometime in life, but I haven't seen her. I've seen Liz blow up. I think it takes quite a bit to make Liz blow up. Virginia. How do you describe Virginia? Virginia's...
She's like her nickname, Ginger. She's lively and spicy and creative and sweet. But sweet, too.
Virginia is very good with kids.
She's fun.
She's a composite. Voila.
I think Virginia's tried to follow her patriarchal blessing, and some of the other kids have too. Her patriarchal blessing mentioned something about teaching the public schools of the nation, something like that, or teaching the children of the nation. So she became a school teacher to try and exploit that. Of course, the ones that have been on missions, Shirlene, Tracy Jr., and David, they all overlapped their missions. There was a 6 month period when we had 3 missionaries out. And then Liz was the first one married, and then Virginia went on a mission, and then Charlotte went on a mission. So 3 of our 5 daughters and both our sons went on missions. And we hold the record in a ward and have for years. No other family in our ward has sent 5 of their children on missions.
Especially daughters.
And we didn't particularly encourage our daughters. We just let it happen.
They all wanted, really wanted
but they,
to go.
I just wanted to go.
In fact, you practically tried to talk us out of them.
You just wanted to make sure that you wanted to go.
Yeah. You certainly didn't apply 1 ounce of pressure.
You didn't try to apply pressure then, because you knew that a man missionary in the field was as good as no missionary at all. In fact, worse.
Nancy, the youngest, is an extremely creative person in art, and probably could also be in music, but she definitely has the artist-like ability in the family, and it's natural. We never could get her to develop it. We hope she'll still have time in this life to get that done, but that's her really creative thing. We're happy to see that she's turning out to be quite a good mother, I think, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And well, that's a brief rundown on all our kids. We got to move along.
Okay. What do you think about politics?
Oh, politics is for the birds. I'm very conservative in today's political arena, if you want to call it that. I think the country is rapidly going to pieces. But I'm particularly concerned about the national debt, which I think is the main cause of inflation. I'm concerned about the welfare program, which I think just perpetuates itself and never does.
People.
It ruins people and perpetuates the jobs of bureaucrats and politicians, and we'll probably never be able to change it on that account. It turns out that politicians just seem interested only in perpetuating themselves, and hardly any of them ever want to leave their positions and their perquisites and their public their place in the public eye. I don't know. I worry about our country. I believe that politicians are betraying our founding fathers in the way they conduct our affairs. Taxation is terrible. It's beyond the point of no return almost. The government assumes that it can spend our money better than we as individuals, and that's not true.
Representatives and politicians are trying to do their best.
Yes,
there are many good men in there trying, but sure is.
But they're certainly in the minority.
Why are you a Republican instead of a Democrat?
Well, the main reason is that Republicans, in a general way, are more conservative fiscally and socially. They want less welfare, lower taxes, that kind of thing.
What do you think of the Watergate affair?
Oh, well, nobody in my family will agree with me on this. I'm alone. I think that Nixon was no worse than Franklin D. Roosevelt. I think he was better than Johnson. And I think he was more honest than Kennedy. And I think he was framed. I don't approve of what any of these men do. I was deplored to learn that Nixon swore. But it was a political thing, because you could have taken Johnson and impeached him over for more reasons than you could try to impeach Nixon, and you could certainly have done it with Franklin D. Roosevelt and many of the others. So I think, now you ask from my point of view, I think he was framed. You could have just as well have done it to several other presidents, including Kennedy, and had just as much grounds for trying to impeach them.
But would you characterize Nixon, you're speaking relatively with other presidents, but
yeah.
Say there was not that contrast of all these other presidents, would you
think
Nixon
was a good
contrast. President? Would you?
I was disappointed in Nixon as being too liberal. I thought it would be more conservative.
What did you think about the cover-up?
What?
What did you think about the cover-up?
I didn't think, well, it was wrong, but I don't think it was the, you know, the crime of the century.
No.
It was described by his opponents as the crime of the century. It was not that. It was just bad.
What kind of a man would you want to see as president of the United States? Who?
Oh,
can
probably.
You name someone? Who would you have chosen if you could have just chosen someone?
Oh, David O. McKay and President Kimball.
That's what we need, I guess, a prophet president.
Joseph Kennedy, I would vote for.
Joseph Smith, too.
Which Kennedy?
Joseph.
You mean David?
You mean David Kennedy. Yes. Yeah, he would impress you as being a really good president, yeah.
Well, I guess this next question has sort of been covered. What kind of a man was Truman, Eisenhower,
yeah.
Roosevelt, Johnson, Kennedy, Nixon? Do you have any comments on any of them in retrospect?
Yeah, Eisenhower was the best of the of those presidents.
If you were president of the United States, what are some of the changes you would like to make? Maybe
well, I sort of hinted at them already. I think it is next to impossible for any president to make any changes because of the entrenched bureaucracy. But I would strive to make it so people did not become wards or slaves of the federal government. In a sense, those on welfare are slaves of our federal government. There's no way they can have any pride of accomplishment or anything else. And yet these people are in the system for three, even four generations, and they want to continue it. They're enslaved. They're trapped in that system. And it may seem cruel, but it would have been better to have let them gone a little bit hungry, you know, and had to work for it. The church plan is best in the welfare plan. Try as much as you possibly can to have them earn what they receive. Don't just give it to them. That's the biggest mistake in the whole welfare program. Also, having the welfare program administered nationally is bad. I think private charity is the only kind of charity there should be. Government, what we really have, what socialism is a religion, in a sense. It would not admit to that. But socialism and communism are religions. And what we have is a state religion of the United States of America. It's as far as our temporal affairs are concerned, it has taken over and is putting its nose in the business of the churches and private organizations. Well, the government leaders will say, well, the church has failed. They didn't take care of the people. Well, the government has had 40 years and spent hundreds of billions of dollars, and they haven't solved a single problem. I think private charity would have done a better job
And no one can afford private charity anymore because they're so busy paying taxes to fill the welfare bill.
I believe in limited government, and I would strive for limited federal government, whose primary purpose is to protect us from aggression and to take care of a minimum number of things and let the people truly exercise free enterprise. That's what I would be for.
Tracy for governor.
I can remember being in a grassroots, can't even remember what it was anymore, political situation, town meeting or something in Provo where they voted you in as
a delegate.
What was it?
Delegate to the state convention. First to the county convention, then to the state convention.
I can remember I was very proud because there were two or three nominations, and then someone nominated Daddy.
Yeah.
And everyone was supposed to keep their head down and not look. And it was a big room, all filled with all kinds of people. In fact, we were sitting towards the very back. And I peeked when they raised their hands. And I think almost everybody in the whole room voted for Daddy.
They used to do it by ballot, secret ballot.
Well, I told everybody it was by raising their hands. But they
could have been that one time. I wouldn't remember.
They told them to lower their eyes.
Yeah.
They weren't supposed to look, but I peeked.
That's the only time I've ever done that. They've asked me to do that again later, but I've always declined. In fact, Howard Nielsen wanted to know if I wouldn't, why didn't I get into politics and try and go up. I don't think that's my... I wouldn't do very well in politics.
I think you'd be pretty good. At any rate, I was very proud that day when you got voted, so many people voted for you. Well, that was the next question. Have you ever considered going into politics? Have you ever considered becoming an educator and going into administration of some kind?
Yeah, in my mid-40s, I realized that many scientists have the option of becoming administrators and are frustrated to know whether to stay in the laboratory or become an administrator. And so I kept working towards more and more being an administrator. And I dreamed, well, now should I really try to be an administrator? Should I try and become a college president? Because, it's been in the family, my Uncle Aaron and whatnot. Yeah, a lot of those thoughts went through my head in mid-40s. They say that's a time of reassessment. But I decided in favor of staying in the laboratory and not becoming administrator. I had had some administrative job offers several times. I was asked to apply for a job as dean of the graduate school at the University of Missouri at Raleigh. I declined that invitation. I was invited to throw my hat in the ring for the presidency of Weber College a few years back, and I did, and then after a while I got to thinking about it, got cold feet and withdrew my name. I was offered one time, I've been contacted several times by the management recruiting firm Booz Allen Hamilton, and I've never taken any of their offers. I was once offered the directorship of a scientific laboratory that Kennecott Copper wanted to establish. I was told that we could build the lab anywhere we wanted, even out in Utah, and I could pick my own men and my own personnel. It was to be a lab of about 100 people. I declined that. They said name your own salary, and I declined that. Mom was a little disturbed. I didn't pursue that one a little further. Kennecott finally built a laboratory in New Jersey. I think they called it the Ledgemont Lab, and that was the lab that I had the offer on. General Electric tried to hire me back on a couple of occasions. First one was, I suppose, maybe a couple of years after I'd been out in Provo about 2 years.
What kind of a salary did they offer you?
Well, I talked with Hal Bovenkirk and said, look, I'm the kind of guy who's probably worth $100,000. How about $65,000? He says, I think that they'd consider that kind of a salary. So that was about 1964.
Working like a half that.
A little bit more than I'm making at the BYU.
Okay. Yeah, I have here, but you've discussed it, I think. What have you been doing at BYU in teaching and research?
I've taught mostly freshman chemistry. I have taught special courses on high pressure about every other year for quite a number of years. When I first went to BYU, there was no one there who was expert in the more advanced areas of science, such as quantum mechanics and statistical mechanics, and I taught those courses because there's no one else to teach them. But within a couple of years of my being there, they had hired chemists and were expanding the department quite rapidly and got people who could handle those courses. I've taught chemistry for chemists at times. I've taught freshman chemistry for everyone. The course I've taught the most is Chemistry 105, which is chemistry for physics people, engineers, medicine, dentistry. I've taught advanced physical chemistry once, I think. But the trouble with teaching advanced courses is that I was out of that for so long as director of research. Certain people got entrenched in teaching those courses, and then when I was free from being director of research, there just was not the availability. And in some respects, I really didn't want to spend the time it would take to build up the particular laboratories. But in the high pressure area, chemists, physicists, chemical engineers have taken high pressure courses from me for years.
When I
do a lot of lecturing. I'm called on to lecture to all kinds of classes on campus, art classes, psychology classes. Chem engineers are always having me lectures. The chemists have me lecture a few times a year.
What do you lecture about?
Well, high pressure and making diamonds, but also a lot on creative persons can do other things besides chemistry, and I get in art, I have one crazy thing I did in art that's sort of the hall rectangles, if you want to call them that, versus the golden rectangle. I have a whole series of rectangles of interest that I've mathematically developed. And I've lectured to the artists about that. They call me over to psychology and other courses to speak on creativity and how come people are creative and why are you creative? What do you think creativity is? Things like that.
What do you think creativity is?
Oh, that's an hour lecture. We can't get into that one.
Is that on a tape somewhere? We ought to have some of those, you know.
I don't think so. I've lectured to the College of Business, and student groups are having me lecture all the time. Here, there, and everywhere.
Just because he gets over-swamped.
The year I graduated, I noticed the various graduate degrees that were being awarded, in what areas, and who the graduate professors were. And I think you were the one who had the more degrees being awarded, the students that were associated with you than anyone else.
That could have been at times in the past, but that's been going downhill.
Yes.
And that's one reason I'm becoming discouraged with being at BYU. Graduate students, just nothing but downhill in the sciences, there just aren't any students to work with. And my last student to work for a PhD was Carl Johansson, and man, that's probably 5 years ago, maybe longer than that. I've had to work with undergraduates. We've had some good ones, but we had some poor ones, and we just can't continue that way. Let's see, I was going to say something else.
Why is it going that way? Do you see any particular cause?
Opportunity. People are going into medicine and biochemistry because there's no opportunity. Nobody's hiring in the other areas.
The industry now prefers engineers and bachelor's degrees.
Industry is hiring mainly bachelor's degrees. Physics is way down. It's hard to get a job as a physicist. Geologists have been way down. Chemists are down, but not as much. Chemical engineers still get jobs, but not chemists. Oh, it's not quite that bad, but it's bad. To only have 6 people working for a PhD
in
a year when there are 32 professors, that's bad.
Well, in the BYU, you have to be with the big name
schools. At the big name schools, one professor will have 30 students. See? Also, people are arguing in the scientific magazines that most universities shouldn't be in graduate work. There's not that many people to be trained. There's not that much need. And they think there ought to be a half a dozen universities, namely the Ivy League, Caltech, and a few others, you know, that produce the PhDs, and the rest of them don't even try.
Has there been a drastic cut in money going into basic research from government and private?
Yeah, particularly the dollar figure stays about the same, but inflation has cut it in half. And the overheads at the universities, when I first started, our overhead was 15%. Now it's about 80%. Well, if you have a $30,000 grant and the BYU is taking 80% of it in overhead, you don't have a very big grant. It's cut by a factor of three since I was first went there 22 years ago, so you got $3,000-$4,000 to play with. Nothing. Can't do anything. There are other bad things. The Freedom of Information Act makes it so that when I write a proposal and send it in the National Science Foundation, you know, it used to be reviewed confidentially by a few people. Now it's public property. Anybody can come in and look at that. How many scientists do you think are going to say their best secrets that they want to try, their best ideas? There aren't. They aren't. And what they do is try to put out an idea that they judge will get them the grant, but doesn't really tell them all their big ideas.
Not a decoy idea.
Yeah, a decoy idea, right. And I don't like that kind of business.
Tell about Jesse Evans Smith and the diamond earrings.
Well, I don't remember the exact details of that, but she was Prophet Joseph Fielding Smith's wife, and she knew there were... Right, and she was somehow aware of our diamond-making business in Provo and knew that we made these black mega diamonds, and we had cut a few of these into tie tacks and things like that, and I don't know the exact details, but we got the message from Benny Lewis, Vice President of the University, that Jesse Evans Smith wanted us to produce for her a set of these black diamonds for earrings. And she wanted it to be known that she had pierced ears, so they had to fit for pierced ears. And, well, it's not all that easy to produce a set of earrings. It really is quite a job. The diamond is hard and very difficult to lab. And before we got around to doing it, Sister Jesse Evans Smith passed away. So we're sorry we hadn't somehow got the things made in spite of the obstacles and difficulty and got them off to her. She'd probably meet us at the pearly gates and want to know where her earrings are.
Well, didn't you get a couple of requests? It seems like you didn't get around to it. And then didn't President Wilkinson finally even contact you on that?
Well, that came from the highest authority that we ought to get something to her, but we didn't ever get it done, unfortunately.
But you did make something. You did have something started. What happened with what you started?
No, we hadn't. We never did even start them for her.
Didn't?
No.
Oh.
We made tie tacks. I've worn one around myself. I made one kind of a thing for Mom, and there are a few around.
Tell about the time that Indian came to see you and you put him to work carrying lumber.
Well, a rather important Indian, this is over in India, an India Indian, came to my lab on the 24th of July. I had forgotten that I had an appointment with him. I was down to our shop on Columbia Lane doing some work with a student that I'd hired to put new doors clear across the front and make these doors insulated. And all of a sudden I get a call that here is this Indian, and he had an appointment with me. And so I told Ma, I was rather perturbed because I'd been busy and hadn't had any time to get at these doors. I said, well, tell him in a polite way to cool his heels at the Royal University and I'll come and Royal Inn and I'll take him out to lunch. Well, I finally decided 2 o'clock is getting late enough, I better go take him out to lunch. So I went and picked him up and said, look, let's wait a little bit for lunch. I've got a student down there working, and we've just run out of lumber, and I've got to see if there's some place in this town we can get some lumber. So we chased.
It's not a Saturday.
Yeah, well, it was a holiday. It was the 24th of July. So we chased all over town trying to find a place open that we could get some lumber at. Finally, I ended up clear out in Pleasant Grove. I noticed a light on in a lumber store there, and a bookkeeper was there working. So I banged on the door and talked him into letting me in. So befores, and we tied him on top of our green Chrysler and hauled him back to the shed, and I says, well, let's just talk here while we work. And so I'd put
Did
him
you
on
have lunch in there somewhere?
Not yet. And I had him holding one end of the board while I measured it and cut it off and had him there working with us. And finally, it got to be time that we finally got to lunch around 5 o'clock or so.
We had to be at the airport. I think you're a little off on your time. We had to be at the airport at 5, didn't we?
I'm not sure. No, 5 o'clock came.
You had to walk up to the university somewhere in there.
I think he did walk up the university somewhere in that.
He had walked up the university first and couldn't find him.
Oh, yeah. I guess that was it. No, the university was vacant that day.
No, he called and asked for a ride, and you told him, well, go ahead and walk.
No.
That's the way I heard it.